It's been 4 weeks since I went off Ozempic, and Charlene is still cracking on. We're experiencing a little bit of a rocky road right now, and there's a lot of questions being asked about how to go forward. Welcome back to Ozempic Diaries. Hey, welcome to Ozempic Diaries. I don't know what episode it is. It's been a month since I stopped taking Ozempic. Charlene has been powering on for a month of plateaus. And today we're going to find out what's changed and what we're going to do about it, because I think we actually need some plans. So, Charlene, how's it been going for you for the last 2 weeks that we've been on break?
It's been fine. I feel like I have made no movement since we last spoke. I don't know if we should call this podcast going forward Ozempic Miseries, rather.
Ozempic Photostat. It's the same week.
Yeah, copy paste. You know, it's the weird thing, though, is that I've been doing so much better with getting to the gym regularly and with my food and protein intake. So now I'm wondering if my weight loss up to this point was not just related to, because I was seeing good, like between 700 and 800 grams a week. Kind of falling off, you know? And now I'm just wondering if maybe I wasn't like underfeeding myself. And that's why I was seeing good results. Because now I'm kind of stabilizing. And for the whole month of May, I've only lost 600 grams.
Okay, so the things that have changed, or is you're actually getting to gym more, and that's cool. But in terms of food, do you think that you have has anything changed? Have you been cheating more? Have you been you're pretty stable with water and all that stuff. So
yes, same with
sleep
water.
Okay, anything, high stress levels.
I get like 7.5 to 8 hours of sleep every night. I did better with my water intake over the last 2 weeks, because the last time we spoke prior to that, I was down a bit on my water intake. So I've upped that back to my usual 3.5 to 4 liters of water. I'm in the gym more regularly. I'm training hard, and I haven't really changed my food intake. Although I will say this. If I have to think about it, I used to just barely manage 3 meals a day. It was hard for me to have like 3 meals. Even though they were small, it was difficult to get breakfast in. So I'd find myself at like 12, half past 12 only like, oh gosh, I haven't had breakfast yet. So I kind of have like breakfast and lunch together. And then I have a protein shake or like a light snack in the mid-afternoon, and then I have dinner. So that's not really 3 full meals. It's like 2 proper meals and a snack. Whereas now I'm doing just 3 meals and I don't snack. I'll have a protein shake maybe in between. So I don't know if my metabolism is just stabilizing and my body's getting enough food now, where before it wasn't actually getting enough food, because I haven't been tracking my calories is the problem. It's not a problem. I didn't want to do that. It's hard work, and I didn't want to have this. I'm already obsessing so much about what's going on with my body. I didn't want to also obsess about every goddamn calorie, because it's too much. So I don't know. Nothing's really changed. I feel like I'm eating more, but not in quantity, if you know what I mean. And it's not like I'm not having alcohol. I'm not binging on sweets. I'm not doing anything strange. And if you think about it, with every like weight loss journey, you do go through like plateaus, and I suppose I can't really call this a plateau, because I've still lost. I mean, 2 weeks have been a plateau, and then the next 2 weeks I was down slightly, and now it's a total of 600 grams down for the four weeks.
Yeah.
Which isn't really a plateau, because I'm still coming down, but it's been a while that I've been seeing the same number on the scale. So, yeah, I don't know.
And especially when you're paying for 1 milligram a week, that's extremely, that can be very depressing.
Yeah. It's hard to like justify it in your mind. But then I have to think to myself that Where would I be if I wasn't taking the Ozempic? I'm on this 6-month journey with my doctor. So I just have to be patient because I have to remember the things that about the drug that is helping me. Like I'm not battling cravings.
The food noise.
I'm not binging or feeling hungry all the time. I don't suffer from food noise. And I also don't really have any side effects from the drug anymore. So I'm actually in a happy, comfortable place. The only thing that is bothering me at the moment or that's making me a bit despondent is that I'm not seeing regular drops on the scale at every week's interval. So I also just have to remind myself that I am down in weight. It's not a significant amount of weight that I'm down by, and I'm not gaining. So I just have to be patient and remind myself that this is actually helping me.
When I was plateauing as well, the kind of like the three options that occur to you are you can go up in dose, which is technically possible, but I don't think is like, I don't know, because I know that, you know, Wegovy is, it goes up to 2 or 2.4 or something, right? But simply throwing more Ozempic at the problem feels like, not dangerous, but it feels like A, more expensive, B, will your body just become inured to it and then you're constantly needing more and more and more and then you feel like a crackhead. Or back off like I've done. We'll see if this is the thing because, you know, I've been off a month and I might go back on. And if I do, maybe there's like a phase thing where same way people use steroids or creatine where it's like, cool, I'm doing a mass building phase. So I'm going to be on steroids for 3 months and then off it again, whatever it might be. And maybe Ozempic becomes something like that, where it's not like a always on, as long as you can maintain when you're off, as I have. But then now I want to lose the next 8 kilograms, right? Now, now Ozempic's going to make that a hell of a lot easier. So that's kind of like option two. And then option three is just, you know, bite down and keep going and see if you can break that plateau. And I think, I mean, where you are, I think you're probably just going to keep going. Right. At least for another, let's say another 2 week period before any drastic changes are made.
Exactly. And because also, like, I guess for me, where I'm at the moment is I'm just going to see these 6 months through. Like, this is the dosage my doctor prescribed me. Like, if I get to the end of next month, like another 4 weeks later, and I haven't dropped so much as 100 grams, then maybe I'll discuss with her going up, to 1 milligram because I'm not really making any more headway and I'm not yet at my goal weight. But realistically, I don't really, exactly like you say, you just don't want to be throwing more Ozempic at the problem. Well, I certainly don't want to be throwing more Ozempic at the problem because A, I don't have like another 20 or 30 kilograms to lose. It obviously will be very different for someone who still has a ton of weight to lose, you know? And I think that's probably also what's making me a little bit despondent is that I'm so close, yet I'm still so far. But then I also have to remind myself, okay, so you're so close to your goal. Then what? Then what do you do? So I'm going to have to just get, and maybe this is also an exercise in teaching me to be patient and to kind of start learning what a maintenance lifestyle looks like as opposed to always rushing or trying to get to the next place, to the next place, to the next place. Because realistically, in my mind, I'm already thinking, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep this weight off without this medication. I'm skeptical. And I've read online, actually, I think I shared the link with you about someone who shared their Ozempic journey and how they felt imprisoned by these are not their exact words, but the way I'm describing it is they felt a little bit like a prisoner of the thought of what if I can't do this without this drug? What if I can't keep it off without this drug? And there was a number of reasons why, one of them being this feeling that they decided to go off Ozempic. And she said she put all the weight back on. And I know that there's a number of things that play into that, that won't be the case for everyone. So in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm grateful that the long-term use of this medication is actually something that's been well-documented and well-researched, and that a maintenance dose, the same way a diabetic would go on to a maintenance dose for the remainder of their years, is an option. The only thing then for me is just finances, budget.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of money to spend to be on a maintenance medication. But then I'm going to have to weigh my options. Like, how terrified am I of putting this weight back on? Or how badly can I not survive the cravings or the food noise or the whatever without it? And I won't know until I try.
Yeah, I think we did the calculation on how much would it episode 11 or something, how much would it cost to do this forever, right? And assuming a 1 milligram maintenance dose, I think about 1,750 rand a month or something like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe actually could it have even be 2,200? I'm not sure. And the funny thing is, I think that if you end up, first of all, there is hope in terms of stopping. You have a different kind. Your food noise is separate to my binge, don't even think about it eating. And I think you might be in a little bit more of a tough situation with the food noise. But I've been off in a month and maintaining is fine. Like, I've learned from the 3 months of being on it what I can eat. And and I feel really great, and I'm working out hard at the gym, and I feel like, if anything, I'm on the maintenance number, essentially. So therefore, at the gym, I'm going to be gaining a little bit of muscle, losing a little bit of fat, and basically doing like body recomposition. But I'm not, and all of my failures come in little cheats that happen, like at dinner with someone or at the braai, or, you know, like, just I'm starting to like do little snacks in between again, you know. And alcohol also is, as I'm still not drinking because that's become such an ingrained habit, but I've had a couple of like a shot glass with an ice cube and some Japanese plum wine, which I'm a big fan of, or a little bit of like Noble Eight Harvest. I've got a sweet tooth for that, but I'm not like drinking big glasses of red wine or big beers or anything like that. But so I do think that if you go off it, you'll probably be able to maintain all right, although for the food noise, I don't know. But I do also feel like, yes, it's expensive to carry on month, but is it worth it? I'm guessing probably yes, if you can on a very baseline financial level make it work. If you can say, cool, I can set aside 2 grand a month to do this, and I can still put clothes on my children's backs and send them to school and all that kind of thing. If you could do that, then the upsides are massive. Like, not having to deal with food noise, protecting yourself from heart disease and diabetes and all those other things that if you bounce back that you would be a possible victim of. You know, you probably most like many of the kind of like richer demographics of South Africa probably spend like 10,000-15,000 rand a month on food. Take 2,000 of that and put it into Ozempic and then buy less food, and you might actually find yourself on like the middle
ground.
You're
automatically eating less anyway, yeah, because your portions are smaller.
And in restaurants, you're not going to have that 160 grand glass of wine or whatever it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a tough one. But it'll be interesting to see if you can, I think, stick with it for another, until our next recording, and see what it is. Mm. So tell me about your blood tests.
Okay, so some context for any new listeners that might be tuning in. I started this journey on Ozempic because of hormonal imbalances, actually, that resulted in significant weight gain on an ongoing basis. So in order to get my weight under control while my doctor and I try and stabilize my hormones due to being premenopausal or in perimenopause, as they call it, I started on Ozempic. So she basically said to me, this Ozempic is going to help you to not continue to gain weight, and it's probably going to bring your weight back down to a more comfortable place. And in doing so, it will improve your mental health, because I was getting very depressed about my weight as well. However, we will have to sort out the underlying hormonal problem. Otherwise, it's just going to continue happening. So basically, what in the beginning of the year, what my blood test showed, that I was iron deficient and I was estrogen dominant. My testosterone and progesterone was also a little bit on the lower side of normal. And so she put me on some herbal medication and Ozempic and said, let's test again in 3 months. So I tested 2 weeks ago and it came back with my iron is under control, which I've been managing with an iron supplement. My insulin, because she tested in addition for my insulin, my insulin's good and stable. My thyroid is happy and stable. My progesterone is still on the lower end of normal. My testosterone is too low. And my estrogen is like skyrocket high, even higher than when I tested in January. So now the next step is...
some kind of insane, like 2,000% or 1,200% of normal or something insane.
Yeah, so so the trick is to, when you test your hormones, you test always on the same day of your cycle. Right. So where I was testing in that phase of my cycle, the normal range was not higher than 900 was the count. Mm-hmm. And mine was like 2,200 and something.
Okay. So it's 100 and something percent higher than it should be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Than
so,
the high end of normal.
Yes. So basically the plan now is that she's put me on some hormone replacement therapy. So I've got a light dose of a testosterone cream that I apply. And next month I'll start, on the first day of my new period, I'll start a little hormone tablet to help try and stabilize the estrogen and progesterone. But other than that, insulin's great, like iron is great, and so that's all positive. And I think that I'm getting there. It's just a process.
No, absolutely. It's interesting that testosterone comes as a cream, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it didn't surprise me that much, because you do get like a gel for men that you kind of, you rub on your arms. So this cream is, and you actually can't get it from a main pharmacy. You get it from like a compound pharmacy where they mix it to your dosage and your requirements specifically. And, yeah, it's just one pump a day on either the inside of my arm or one of my thighs. And then I alternate from left side to the right side. And so also interesting what I read about this testosterone cream now is that it takes about 3 to 4 months to actually start making a difference, or for you to start feeling a difference in your body. Some women have shown a change in like as early as 2 months, but they say don't expect anything less than that. So, yeah, that's interesting. I'm just grateful that I have at least the eating and the weight under control now, because with all of those other things going on, you really start feeling like you're broken, you know, and there's always some goddamn problem in your body or ailment. And if you're overweight, you automatically feel awful. Like you don't feel well. Either your gut's hurting, or you're too tired, or compounded with all of the other factors. Having this one part, and that's also what I try and remind myself of with the Ozempic, that one little silo or section of my overall health is feeling under control, and just having that like positive, feeling more positive about myself and in my body, that's such a big win that I can actually, with the other hormonal problems, I can just be like, it's okay. It's going to be okay. It's not all doom and gloom, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I mean, I am not a doctor. Neither of us are doctors. If you're listening to this, we're not doctors. But When you've got like more than 100% of the kind of the estrogen normal levels in your body and a low testosterone, testosterone is good and bad in a lot of ways. Like it's very good in that it helps you lose weight. It's a very powerful hormone for that. It's very powerful for building muscle, for generally get up and go as well. Like that kind of, let's go and oppress other nations, like very testosterone driven. But you know, it also caused male pattern baldness, not great, but, it's got negatives, but I wouldn't be surprised if your plateau was somehow also just linked to the fact that, because estrogen is also, I know more about testosterone than estrogen, but I'm guessing that estrogen's linked to motherhood and to like being capable of bringing up a baby and not all about leaning out so you can chase down deer. It might be impinging your weight loss by simply going like, oh, no, we're an estrogen saturated thing now. I don't want to lose weight. I want to like keep the children in the cave.
I want to like bulk up. Yes, exactly. I need the milk going, fluff, you know? I need the extra fluff because we're growing humans, except we're not.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, so from how I understand it and how my doctor tried to explain it to me in layman's terms is that your ratio of estrogen to progesterone as well as testosterone is very important. Even though testosterone is a little bit more of an outlier, your estrogen and progesterone, they need to kind of be doing like a dance. Mm. So if the one's too low and the other one's too high, or they're, you know, the one's kind of stable and the other one's too low or high, that will cause upset in the whole body. And so getting them, and also unfortunately part of being in perimenopause is if you were to draw your hormones on a graph, instead of them just going gradually up and down and like in a linear way, not a linear way, in a what do you call it?
Unpredictable wave. A sine wave, yes. Or whatever, yeah.
Yes. So they're like, the if you map out the three different hormones, they're like running parallel with each other on those little curves. Whereas in perimenopause, they start doing up, down, up. It looks like literally like the three of them are doing three different zigzags on a graph.
Right, right.
And so that's just what you're just trying to get to that point of stabilizing it, because that's what's making you feel awful. And not just feel awful, just like your body does strange things, like you want to eat all the bloody time, you know, or just hold on to weight for some reason. So yeah, I thought I just wanted to share that with our listeners, because I am, from having spoken to some women in the community, the WhatsApp community, I know there are other people on the platform that are in perimenopause, and it might be helpful for them to hear what I'm struggling with so that they feel a little less alone.
Yeah. I think at our age, you start getting these little chilling reminders from your body that you should be dead soon. You know,
like, I know.
Your caveman body is like, your science is amazing, but you should be dead now. 45 is too old.
Yes. It's really, it's troubling actually, because you realize how fleeting life actually is. And I think of how, I wish I was more concerned with this in my younger years. Like if I could do anything to talk, if I were to say something to young people, just like take care of your goddamn bodies, drink water and sleep. Just do those things, you know, because you don't realize how quickly it's gone. That window of opportunity seems to be narrowing on me very rapidly, like a noose around my neck. And I'm just like, my kids are still too young to be dealing with a mom who's, and then my kid chewed me the other day. Oh, you can be such a little, what did he say the other day to me? Well, you'll be busy this weekend, because either you're busy doing emails or cooking, or you're not feeling great.
I was like,
I am going to punch you.
Yeah. Then you just like post up a list of phone numbers for different orphanages in the area and be like,
I'm just like,
subtle.
And it takes every ounce of my self-control to not be like, well, maybe.
maybe my body's not feeling well because I had to birth you, you little, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You just got to like woosah those feelings.
Nature's like, oh, you've had two kids? Cool, you can die now. We're done with you.
Yes, I'm like, never mind that these kids still need to be raised to become like adults. And I have to be strong enough to be able to see them through life still, you know.
Yeah. As an older parent, you know, I was, I was 40 when Ben was born. So I'm going to be 60 when he's 18. I mean, that's quite daunting. So yeah, you got to get the stuff on lock now. You can do it any time of life. It just gets harder and harder. And 44 apparently is a big physiological jump where it like your body goes, let me die. And you have to fight that from now on, you know.
That is true.
So on your side, it seems to be like just a fast bait. On mine, I was on 88.8 when I finished the first 3 months, and then I briefly went down to 88.2 and then up to 88.7 and then down to 87.8. And I was to break through 88 was great. And I've gone back up to 88.8. So I've been more or less stuck here. And what I think I'm probably going to do is give myself a 45th birthday present of going to get another prescription, because I'm on 88.89, let's say. I want to get down to 80. I've got 9 kilos left to go, and I know that I can do it. It's just going to take me 2 years instead of 6 months. And I feel like I can maintain without killing myself with willpower, but losing, it takes a lot of willpower out of me. So what I think I might do is just go and get another one, use it as a phase, like a training phase, get down to 80, taper off again, and then maintain. Because as you say, what happens when you get down to your goal weight? I like to think that when I get to 80, I'm going to be like, for a 45-year-old, 80 is fine for me, actually, at my height. This is shallow and terrible, but... and we're going on a holiday internationally, and there may be beaches involved, and that's going to happen in September, June, July, August, September. I've got 3 months from my birthday, which is on the 9th of June, to get beach fit, which is such a stereotype, but just lean into it.
Exactly. Also, I think if you put a goal to it, like I'm always like, there's always like a wedding coming up or some big birthday it's December time and I want to like feel comfortable in a bathing suit or whatever. I find if I don't set those little goals for me, however trivial or vain or however they might sound, it's a little something to work towards, you know?
Yeah, it's the story that you attach to the mission rather than just going, my goal is 8 kilograms. It's like, imagine yourself on the beach, you know.
Yes, this
ripped.
Is the thing. Cause it becomes like a tangible idea, essentially. You're like, oh, just think if I can stick to this by such and such a time, this time of the year, I'm going to be so happy. And then I always just like, I have to, in those moments when I've hit a goal or whatever, and I arrive there and I'm in my cozy on the beach or whatever, I have to really be mindful to be like, Charlene, you're in a good place. You got to a good place. Before you now like jump into the, oh, but I wish I could be like here, take a moment to just breathe and be like, you know what? I'm in a hell of a lot better place than what I was before. Either, yes, I hit my goal, or I am really close to my goal. I didn't quite hit it, but I'm nowhere near where I was before. Just take a moment to appreciate it and pat yourself on the back and be like, my sacrifices were worth it. I like myself. I feel good. Just try and use some positive language, you know? And then, like you say, before you jump back on the bandwagon and just be like, because I don't know if that's sustainable. Just take a breather in between from time to time is really worth it.
Words for you to listen to.
I know. I'm like trying to manifest it in my own mind. That's why I keep saying
it. You have to like hypnotize yourself into accepting that while feeling I should have lost 4 kilos in the last month and it's unfair, horribly unfair.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess if I had lost like, 200 grams a week, at least, I would be happy, you know? But Anyway.
Yeah, it's very difficult sitting on a plateau, yeah. But let's catch up. Let's catch up in 2 weeks where things will probably have changed. Look at the emotional messes that Charlene and I are. stay tuned. Say on the WhatsApp community, say hi. If you are listening and you're on your own Ozempic mission, then if you're on a plateau, just hang in there. Especially we've seen a lot of people in the community in the on-ramp phase, like 0.25 milligrams or 0.5, and they're not yet seeing like quick weight loss. Like that's fine. That's not supposed to happen just yet. Some people do, and it's mostly water weight, but just hang in there. You know, it's actually at the 0.5 and the end of 0.5 and the 1 milligrams where you start seeing like real changes to your appetite and that kind of thing.
100%. And I just also like what I always try and tell the people on there is just have faith on like the introductory dose. Your body's still adjusting. You'll give yourself like 6 weeks and you'll feel like a different person. And then it just goes from strength to strength there. Like as much as I've spent this whole discussion, like moaning about my bloody plateau, is actually just because I've become spoiled with feeling so good with having made strong progress. And now
you're doing 900
I'm getting
grams to a kilo point.
Chowing a bit of
week.
A humble pie, you know.
Yeah. It happens. I guess it happens to everyone. That should be part of the T's and C's of this thing. Okay. Well, good luck and we'll catch up soon.
Okay. Okay, cheers.